Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Good morning, everybody, or rather, good afternoon. It is 12:07. Welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, and we're starting with yours here on News Talk WSB. All right, lines are open. Here's the number, 404-872-0750, or we've got a toll-free number where I will absolutely happily, well, actually, I won't happily pay for the call, but Pete Spriggs, my boss, will, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Taking questions today about money, real estate, unemployment, what's going on with all three of those things, and we're going to do our little Glinkonomics segment in a little bit, talking about what has happened in the economy this week and why I think there's so many unusual and interesting things to talk about. Online, let's go there. ThinkGlink.com, ThinkGlink.com. I'd love for you to follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @Glink, @GLINK. And when we talk there, it is all about what's going on in the conversation that's happening online while we are on the air. How about that? Both things at the same time. Well, both things at the same time when I can actually type and talk, which is a little bit harder than you might imagine. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter, thinkglink.com. There's all kinds of information there that we are sharing, and happy to kick that off. So, 404-872-0750. Let's just go to the phones. We're going to mix it up today, folks. Mike joins me on the line from Virginia. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay, I moved from Arlington to Lorton, Virginia for love. I like Arlington, but I love my girlfriend better.
Okay. And I thought you were going to say, I love the mountains, I love the rolling hills, I love the... But no, yeah. You love your girlfriend. That's mine, too.
So she has owned her house since 1998. She bought it with her ex-husband, and I sold my house this year. So she bought him out as a part of the divorce, and it's worth about $700,000 now. And what we're trying to figure out how to do, and we're getting conflicting answers, is how do I buy into it, you know, half, so that we each own half, have the same amount of equity and basis, but preserving everything that she's earned, the equity that she has currently, and not have a big tax hit.
So that's... Okay, that's an interesting question.
Amazing. You would think it's more common than it is, but yeah.
Well, so there's some questions that I have to ask you that I'm a little bit unclear about. So
okay.
The first question is, are you and your girlfriend going to be more than boyfriend and girlfriend ever?
We're forever. We may not get married. She went through the divorce from hell, but. We are going to be together for the rest of our lives.
And why does she want to share the house with you, or why do you want to share the house with her?
Well, part of it is so that we both get the tax deduction for the mortgage interest. We plan to refinance it for a 10-year fixed mortgage, and and then have it paid off by the time we're ready to retire.
Mm-hmm. So because you're not planning on getting married, the two of you are what I would call unmarried partners,
yeah,
right?
That sounds good. Very significant others.
Okay, significant others. This is, so what I'm referring to is actually not your relationship, which
okay, yes, it's from a,
can be as significant as you want it to be, but you guys could just be friends who are trying to make a business relationship work, right?
Okay.
So I'm trying to take the emotion out of it, because I think to come up with a formula that's going to work for both of you, that's going to be pretty important. So when anybody who's unmarried, whether or not they're in a sexual relationship, right, you have to have some defining parameters, and you need it in writing when it comes to real estate. And one of the big mistakes that I hear all the time from people who call the show is my boyfriend and I, or my girlfriend and I, and then you go through the long, troubled history of their relationship, and then they, you know, or they were about to get married, they bought a house, and then they broke up, or somebody died. And so there are all kinds of things that happen. And so when you have a partnership agreement, and this, again, not about your relationship partnership, but just the business side of it, you have to spell out how each thing gets divided, who's putting in what, and how you're going to make it work. Now, if you were going to get married, which is why I asked you about this, this would all be able to work out in a lot better way, right, without tax implications.
Right.
But because you're not thinking about getting married, but you are thinking about having this relationship, you have to plan for, in a business sense and in a legal sense, what happens if it doesn't work out, or what happens if one of you dies unexpectedly, or one of you gets into some sort of a horrific car accident and you're lying there unconscious in a hospital.
The equivalent of a prenuptial agreement, right?
Sort of. It's actually a little bit more than that, though, because a prenuptial agreement is designed to get you to an event,
okay,
a legal event, which is the marriage. Right? It's a love event, but it's really a legal event. And then that marriage contract is what takes you beyond. But since you're not intending to get married, you guys need other kinds of paperwork that an unmarried couple, right, has to go through. So it's a little like what a gay couple would have to go through.
Exactly.
Who couldn't get legally married in their state in order to protect each other and to protect the assets that are there. And so the first thing you need is a really good real estate attorney.
Okay.
And then you're going to need an estate attorney. But the real estate attorney will help you divide out what there is. So, for example, let's say the house is worth $700,000, and how much is her mortgage?
Her mortgage?
Yeah.
Let's see. She has, there's about...
Okay, so here's the first thing that you don't know this right off the top of your head.
Not off the top of my head.
Okay, so we're just going to assume for discussion purposes, and because it's morning and I can't, on Sunday and I can't do math as well as during the week, right?
The intake principal is about $450,000.
The principal is about...
mortgage.
Okay, so she owes $450,000, so she's
correct.
Got about...
I'm willing to assume half of that.
Okay. So when you refinance, you guys can refinance together.
Exactly.
And then she can put you onto the half of the house. Now,
the plan is, since I have cash, to pay it down, and so we have the same amount of equity and refinance for a 10-year fix.
Okay. So what a lawyer will do is a lawyer will create a chart. And if you don't, if the lawyer is incapable of doing math, some of them are. Some of them, like my husband Sam, are really good at it. You'll bring in your tax preparer or your accountant, and you'll probably need one of those too. Basically, you guys are going to have to build a stable of people to help you through this and through getting your relationship sort of legalized to a place where you both can protect each other, and that includes insurance and all the other things that you would have maybe normally if you were married, but since you're probably not going down that path, you're going to have to do it separately. And so what you'll do is, you'll essentially refinance the house. You'll pay it down. So now there's $250,000. If there's $250,000 in equity before, now there'll be $500,000 in equity. And you refinance the rest and you split it. And you're basically buying a chunk of the property.
Exactly.
And you're going to document that in a way that's going to make some sense to her. And she probably... there probably won't be a tax event for her, at least not now.
That's what we want to be sure, and it seems like there are two ways of doing it. She could either do a quick claim deed for half the value of the property or sell me half, but it seems like there's more of a tax hit
if she does the quick claim deed. She deeds it to you at her cost basis.
Mm-hmm.
And that shouldn't be a tax situation, a taxable event for her, but that's what your tax preparer will tell you. And so you need to actually consider very carefully how it is. Giving the gift actually should be able to come out of her lifetime gift exemption.
Okay.
So it shouldn't create a taxable event. And you're putting it into the property, so the mortgage is getting reduced. It should put you both on even footing going forward. But what the attorney is going to do is document all of this, document who is putting in what money each month for the maintenance and upkeep of the property, and then documenting what happens if, due to some unforeseen circumstance, the two of you break up or one of you dies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really going to govern the relationship. And so it is a little bit like a prenup in that you have to go through all of those scenarios.
Sure. But it's worth doing.
But it's a postnup, too, because this document will survive the whatever refinancing. Let's just call it the refinancing. But it's super important that you get that down. And then you have to back that up with the estate attorney and all the other things. So your living will, your regular wills. There may be a trust that you want to put this house into so that you're both the beneficiaries of it. And a trust may solve some of these other problems for you.
Oh, okay.
So it's going to be in concert. And because I'm not an attorney and I don't even like to really play one on the radio, I want to make sure you get real legal opinions that will work in the state in which you're living now.
Okay. And we plan on doing all that. Just with the interest rates going up, we were kind of in a hurry to get this 10-year fixed, you know.
Oh, I don't think you have to be in such a hurry.
Okay.
I really don't. And that's because sort of long-term interest rates, and believe it or not, the 10-year is sort of what the 30-year is based on.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to, that's come down, in fact, a little bit this week, and I'll talk about that on my Glinkonomics section of the show a little bit later on. I don't think you have to worry about that so much, but for you, the extra quarter of a percent is not as important as getting the paperwork right and making sure both of you are on the page with exactly how it's going to work. You both understand the documentation. You both understand what the what the implications are in the best case scenario and in the worst case scenario. And for any unmarried partners, you know, gay, straight, parent, child, you know, siblings, it doesn't matter. Getting it on paper, having everybody aware and talking it through in a calm manner, that's going to be the most important thing. It's going to govern the relationship, and I promise you, it's going to make it much better down the line. Mike, let me know how it goes, okay? 18 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Kling Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time. 404-872-0750. Taking your calls next on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elyse Kling is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elyse Kling Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours here on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinklink.com, thinklink.com. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink, at GLINK. All right, 25 minutes past the hour. Lines are open, so you can start calling in now. We'll take some calls in the next half hour. I want to talk a little bit about what happened with interest rates this week. They started dropping, and they started dropping dramatically after the federal chairman, Ben Bernanke, stunned Wall Street on Wednesday afternoon by saying the economy is still too sluggish for him to start tapering off on stimulus. And honestly, everybody thought that this is what was going to happen. It was clear, right? Everybody thought, the economists all thought, if you polled 150 economists, 149 said that he was going to taper off the bond buying, the $85 billion of QE3, quantitative easing number three. He was going to back that off starting in September. And he was going to back it off. Maybe it was going to be $10 billion a month. Maybe it was going to be $20 billion a month. But everybody thought that he was going to do it. But, in fact, he said the economy is still too sluggish. It isn't working. And so he has continued to buy $85 billion a month in treasury and mortgage-backed securities. He's going to continue to pump money into the economy and push interest rates back down. And you know what happened? Immediately after he started talking and they released his comments, boom. Interest rates started to fall. The points you needed to pay to buy down the interest rate fell. Everything started to turn around. and interest rates dropped and ended the week. The next day, they were already down a quarter of a point from 4.75% to 4.5% to 4.375%. Absolutely unbelievable. We'll talk more about this and take your calls next segment after news, weather, and traffic on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours, 404-872-0750 on News Talk WSB. Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours. Find me online, thinkglink.com. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Check out what's going on in my Twitter page. We're already tweeting, at Glink. I'd love for you to follow me, at G-L-I-N-K. I have a Facebook page. We've got Pinterest. We've got all kinds of things that you can do in social media with ThinkLink, and I hope you will join us, because there's a whole lot of fun stuff going on. The number here today, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. More Glinkonomics in a moment. Meanwhile, let's go to the phones. Eric joins me on the line. Hey, Eric, what's going on? Eric, I'm having a little trouble understanding you.
Hello?
That's a little bit better. Try
there
again.
You go. Hey, how you doing, ma'am?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind today?
Yes, ma'am. I was actually calling you. I was trying to get some information. I listen to you on the weekends, and you give out some pretty good information. So I was actually wanted to find out. Yeah, thank you. No, thank you. I was trying to get some information as far as like timeshares. I got stakes. I went out to Las Vegas, and I got snookered into one of those timeshare deals.
Oh, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Right? Not when you have to bring your checkbook. If you go to one of those things, what I always say is, just don't bring any money with you. No credit cards, no checkbooks, no cash. There's nothing they can do to you if you go there and have no way to pay for things.
That's right. Well,
but that's not what happened, is it?
No, it didn't happen that way. they basically set me up with almost a deal that I couldn't turn down. I was thinking that I would be going out to Vegas a lot more than I wound up going. So I've been paying on a timeshare for about 3 or 4 years now that I've only used twice.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I'm actually looking to try to sell it, but I go to a lot of these websites and I actually put some money into it. Well, first live and learn experience. Actually try to hire somebody to sell it for me, and it was one of those upfront companies, and I got took for my money.
All right, let me just stop you there, Eric. How long have you been listening to my show?
Not long enough, apparently.
Not long enough. What about Clark? You ever listen to Clark Howard?
Yes, ma'am. And I saw Clark at the airport, and I asked him, and I did. He was running back and forth. I really didn't get time to actually talk to him. But I know now the whole buy, and that was a couple of years ago. But the whole buy paying up front thing is a big scam.
It's absolutely a big scam. So there are only a couple legitimate ways for you to unload this. And you can write this down, but I got to tell you, none of them are going to be good. All of them are going to be painful.
Oh.
Okay? Because you're going to pay for this mistake you made. And I'm sorry about that. I wish it wasn't the case. But it isn't going to be fun. So here are your options. And I'm not putting them in an order in which they're more or less palatable. Number one, you can try listing your timeshare for sale with the company that actually is managing it. And if they have other new timeshares, which they have plenty of in Las Vegas, they're going to be less interested in selling yours. But at this point, all you're trying to do is limit the future carrying cost damage.
Yes, sir.
So what did you pay for this timeshare?
I wound up paying close to $12,000 for it.
Okay. And what's your carrying cost every year?
I think it's almost $200.
$200 a year.
Yes, ma'am.
And it gives you what, a week in Vegas?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So your timeshare is probably worthless or close to worthless. So you can go to the management company and say, I'd like to sell my timeshare, and they'll say, well, we'll see what we can get for it, and they may get $2,000 or $3,000 and then keep all of it or half of it. And you're going to lose the $12,000. Are you still paying it off, or did you pay cash for it?
No, I'm actually only $2,000 left. I've actually been paying on it monthly, like a regular mortgage, and I've been writing it off as a monthly debt. As far as trying to get taxes on it as well.
Okay. So once you get rid of the debt, then it doesn't matter. So that's your first and best option. Go there, try to make a deal with the management company. Your second option is to donate the timeshare to a nonprofit organization that will turn around and sell it for its own benefit. You won't get any money, but you won't owe any money going forward. So that would be like a church or some sort of nonprofit group. So you get at least a tax write-off.
Okay.
And that might be helpful to you now and in future years.
Okay.
And then the third thing you can do is you can try to put an ad online for the timeshare where, again, you're going to be selling it, but you may run afoul of the rules through which you bought it, and you're going to have to go back to your management company and see. Usually they limit your ability to resell it without them. That's why you can give it away to a nonprofit, but you can't actually sell it. So start by going back to the management company and seeing what their deal will be to sell it for you.
Okay.
And remember, you don't care if you get any of the money out of it.
No, I just want to get out of it.
You just want to get out of it. That's exactly right. And so you probably will be able to do it that way. And in the future, you got to remember, there is no such thing as a free lunch. If you're invited to a free lunch, leave your card, your checkbook, and credit cards behind because it's a free lunch. And I have gone through this just... every few years, Sam and I will go through one of those timeshare presentations just to kind of see what the latest things are. And, man, even Sam and me, we find ourselves almost getting sucked in. That's how good they are. These people have been taught how to bring in every sucker born that every minute. And they bring them in, and they sit them down, and you're not allowed to leave until you sign something. Now, we have breaking news. We're going to take a moment break. 43 minutes past the hour. That's exciting news about the Georgia Dome. Very exciting. Well, the new stadium. We're talking about timeshares. And so I just wanted to wrap up and say to Eric that on my website at thinklink.com, I have a tremendous amount of information about timeshares and about selling them. And I encourage you to go there. Stick the word timeshare into the search box and up should pop all kinds of stories. You can sort them according to any way you want and really learn a little bit about what you have to know before you go talk to the timeshare management company. All right, 404-872-0750. Mark joins me on the line all the way from England. Mark, when you said last week on Twitter, and you're a regular Twitter commentator, that you were going to call, I actually didn't think you'd be able to do it, but you are, and so welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and thank you for taking my call.
So how can I help you today?
It was just to commend you. I mean, I do like listening to your show, because I'm married to a beautiful young lady from Atlanta. So that's how I get to follow your show, because I follow it when I'm in Atlanta and also when I'm here in England. And I just think it's great that you sort of, the way that people can just ring in and get positive answers, and some of those stories that come through are quite heart-wrenching, which we don't have shows like that in England.
So, my goodness, because nobody has any hearts in England? I know that's not true. I used to live there.
I know, but we don't have that type of show where you can, on in that respect, that you'll go the whole hog and give all the sort of information and everything else like that.
Well, I'm really delighted that you're able to call in, and thank you so much. And it's nice to actually hear your voice, because as wonderful as Twitter is, it's still words on a screen, and you don't actually get the emotion behind somebody's voice. So, delighted. When's your next trip to Atlanta?
Week Wednesday. I'm back over there for the next 2 months. It's just I own a company in England, but I'm married to a young lady in Atlanta, so I flip between, I'm half there and half here, so help my blokes here, and then I go and see my beautiful wife in Atlanta.
Well, I hope you have a safe trip, and perhaps at some point in time we'll be able to meet up in person, and we'll take this to the next step as well. But have safe travels to you.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for calling the show. It's 45 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. It's so delightful to have, excuse me, somebody call all the way from England, which is really my home away from home. 404-872-0750. Ray joins me on the line. Hi, Ray.
Hello.
What's going on?
I'd like to talk to you about a bankruptcy where we filed bankruptcy and gave up a condo.
Uh-huh.
And then, but the bank never finished the process.
They never closed on the foreclosure. They never took it back officially.
Right. And we still have to pay the condo fee. And it's, eating us up.
So here's the problem that a lot of lenders have figured out a way around, which is that when you give up a condo or when you do a deed in lieu of foreclosure, you have to actually close the transaction. And it's hard sometimes for people to get banks to actually move on the paperwork.
Right.
But you have to do it. And so if you can't do it on your own, you have to engage a real estate attorney to make sure you close that loop. Because the bank, when you gave up that condo, the bank should have taken over paying those fees. But they don't want to pay the fees.
Right.
They don't want to pay the upkeep. They don't want to do what they're supposed to do with these condos. Because, believe it or not, as fast as prices have risen in some ways, they haven't always risen in, like, condos in Atlanta and Midtown. It hasn't quite come back yet.
Uh-huh.
So you're going to probably need to engage a real estate attorney, which is like getting kicked in the teeth on top of getting socked in the stomach,
right,
to get this thing closed. But if you don't get it closed, you don't start the clock ticking on your credit history for getting this thing taken care of and drawing a line in your sand and moving ahead.
Right.
So you're going to have to actually redouble your efforts and go back to the bank. Now, I know of people who have even had to sue the lender.
Oh, yeah?
To make them do what they were supposed to do. And depending on how much that was, you know, you may be able to do that or should do that. But I want to encourage you to talk to a real estate attorney first.
Okay.
So that you actually understand what has to be done to close the loop. Now, in other parts of the country, it's easier for this to happen, right? But when you're in a not a desirable location, in a not desirable type of property, lenders have been a little slow in the uptick. Now, who is your lender? Who is the bank? Or
you mean tell me, Bank of America?
It's Bank of America. Okay, here's what I want you to do. Send me to questions@thinklink.com. Send me your name, contact information, loan number, address of the property, and a brief summary of what happened to you, and I'll forward it to somebody at Bank of America who will try to get that done for you. I don't know if we'll be able to get it closed. What I'm trying to do is cut red tape for as many people as I can, and so far I've been able to cut red tape for about 40 people. And they've either saved their homes or gotten through with the process like you have. And so I'm feeling very proud of that. But at 40 is a, you know, it's not even a drop in this bucket that's going on out there. So
well, I figured if anybody could hold my hand, you could guide me the right direction.
Well, I will try my best get this done for you. But if I can't do it, and I'll explain more to you when you email me, you're going to have to hire a real estate attorney. And then that person should be able to help you. All right? But questions@thinklink.com, and give me all the information I've just asked for, and we'll get started. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at clarkhoward.com and midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, @Glink, @GLINK, and sign up for my free weekly newsletter at thinklink.com. Julie joins me on the line now from Powder Springs. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm great. How's your Sunday going?
Oh, it's beautiful. Thank you. I really enjoy your show.
Thanks.
I have a quick, probably easy question, but don't know the answer to it. My husband and I have a 15-year mortgage at 5.25%, and we've been paying more on the principal. So we have about $48,000 left on the loan. And we're wondering if we should refinance.
How many years are left in the mortgage, do you think?
Well, based on the extra that we're paying, we believe it will have it paid off in under 5 years. So I don't know if we should do a 5-year ARM maybe, or
do you need cash for anything?
No, not really.
So the problem that you're going to have is, first of all, you only have $48,000 left, so
right.
It's really hard to get a loan for less than $50,000.
That's what I was wondering.
And the second thing is that if you do get a loan for, let's say, you know, if you needed, let's say you needed $25,000 to fix up the house, so you got a loan for $75,000 and you did a 5-year adjustable rate mortgage, and let's say that started out at about 2.5% or 3%, or better than that, I would just say you do a 10-year loan. fixed at about 3, 3 and a quarter, and then you could just prepay that. But you don't need the extra cash. And really, for you, it probably, even though you're at 5 1/4%, it really doesn't make that much sense for you to refinance. And the only way you'd want to do it is if you said to me, I think we could get it all paid off in a year if I took out, or 2 years if I took out a equity line of credit. And if you took out an equity line of credit and you could pay it off that quickly, then it might make sense. But I really think you're better off. I mean, right now you're just paying all principal. So when you pay all principal, there's no point in adding any more interest into that. It just doesn't make any sense. So kudos to you for paying it off as quickly as you're paying it off. But unless you can tell me that by refinancing, you're going to be able to pay it off in 3 years, I don't think it's going to be worth the time, effort, and money you're going to spend to do it. But always try and do the numbers, see if you can get the deal, and then pull the trigger and make a decision. Thanks for listening to the show. It is 58 minutes past the hour. Glenconomics is next. There is so much more to say about rising and falling interest rates. The monumental thing that the Fed did this week, Bernanke, saying the economy is too sluggish to pull back on QE3. What that means to you, coming up next on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
It's 107. Welcome back to the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I want you to follow me on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Don't miss out on half the conversation, because there's always something interesting going on Twitter. And if not, you can follow me on Facebook, or try thinklink.com and sign up for the free weekly newsletter, or the Equifax Finance blog, Yahoo, AOL, CBS News. There's all kinds of places that we play with content in the ThinkLink community. So I want to go back to the Fed's decision this week to continue buying stimulus, basically. It's a stimulus program at $85 billion a month. And the Fed is basically printing money to do this. There's no doubt about that. We watched interest rates go up over the last couple of months sharply from 3.5% for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage to 4.75%. And everybody thought that the Fed was going to start tapering back. Taper, there's a word you don't hear very often. Tapering back on its bond buying binge. Try saying that 10 times fast. At least by $10 billion a month. And surprise, surprise, Wednesday afternoon, Ben Bernanke said, sorry, I know you think we're going to do this and pull back, but the economy is still too sluggish to stop buying bonds. And everybody in the world went, oh, that's not good. So immediately, the stock market, which had been all the way into like the 1400s at some point over the last few weeks, shot up, then came back a little bit. But really, the stock market, this is all good news, right? Companies are borrowing money at super low rates. I mean, Verizon did a, $40 billion bond issue. Sold out right away. I think it was oversold, actually. Wall Street knows that the bond buying is good for it, but clearly it is not floating all the way down to everybody else. Let's call it the 99%. And so what we're seeing is that mortgage interest rates, which had gone all the way up, now are falling back. And terms that lenders were offering on 30-year loans immediately eased Wednesday afternoon following Bernanke's announcement. So, for example, the interest rate on a 30-year loan with no discount points dropped from 4.5% to 4.375. If you wanted to get a 30-year fixed mortgage at 4.1%, borrowers were paying 1 point, but Wednesday morning it had been 2 points, right? So that got cut in half. So what was Ben looking at? Ben Bernanke was looking at retail sales and industrial production, both growing more slowly than economists had expected. Consumer sentiment fell for the second straight month in September. And while we did see mortgage home buying continue, that too was starting to fall off. Housing starts were significantly lower than had been expected. And all of those things add up to kind of an and really, it's not like the economy was going gangbusters anyway. So to pull back even more, to see first-time unemployment claims rise above 300,000 again, all of these had to be factors in why the Fed is keeping its bond-buying program, right? And there's also been this tightening of financial conditions in recent months. So we're seeing not such a great economy, and it took enough of a tick that the Fed decided they were going to keep things going. They were going to go for another round of bond buying. Even as the unemployment rate, the official unemployment rate, ticked down towards 7%. And remember, that 7% was Bernanke's red line, right? Bernanke said when unemployment gets to 7%, we're probably going to stop buying bonds and then taper that off the following year, which would be next year, 2014. And so what is happening with that unemployment rate? Well, what we're seeing is a lot of part-time jobs, not full-time jobs, being created. Full-time jobs that are not really high-end full-time jobs. We're seeing the unemployment rate for people in their 20s, 25 and under, hit 20%. That's pretty lousy. And so there's really just an uncertainty out there. There's really just, it's not like you can count on having a great job and getting going. And that said, I got to tell you, the people I'm hiring for my business who are all in their early 20s are really a very smart, together, and talented group of people. They want to work. They want to do something interesting, and they want to be stimulated. And I'm happy to hire them as far as I can, which is not as far as I'd like, because I will only hire when I have business. And I think I'm not like any other. You know, I'm like all the other small businesses, right? I'm not unlike other business owners who want to have some sort of comfort and understanding that if you make the investment in these young people and in building your business, that the returns are going to come. And we just don't know that right now. That's the measure of a sluggish economy. Jerry's on the line with us right now from Douglasville. Jerry, welcome to the Elise Link Show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
So I know you want to ask a little bit about this. This is on your mind, this idea of bond buying and stimulus and what's going on with the economy. What are you thinking about?
Well, basically, things have improved some, but not really a whole lot. For instance, we talked about the unemployment rate. You probably already realize that over the last 40 months, more people have left the job market. In other words, they're not even trying to get a job and not even counted anymore than jobs have been created.
Correct. I didn't even say that, but it's absolutely true. The labor participation rate is like where it was in the 80s or something. It's some really low number.
1954. It's pretty bad. So the economy is not as good as... My question was, though, $85 billion a month, and they've been doing this stimulus for the last, 2 years?
Yep.
That's over $1 trillion a year. How long can they continue to put this kind of money into it, and then what's going to happen when they finally decide that they can't continue to do that?
You know, that is the question of the year. And I don't know that anybody knows the answer to it, which is why Bernanke is so hesitant to withdraw stimulus and why there was an uproar about the possibility of pulling back. Even the idea when he first started to talk about tapering it, that caused the stock market to drop. It caused the interest rates to kind of bobble a little bit, and they just felt like that was not safe enough. So on one hand, Bernanke knows full well that he is really pumping the primer for Wall Street. Right? He knows that what he's doing is great for Wall Street.
Yes,
what
ma'am.
He's betting on is that will eventually trickle down to people. But how long does that take?
It hasn't done it.
It hasn't really done it. Exactly. And so what if he pulls back on the stimulus? So now it's bad for Wall Street, and it can't be good for Main Street is what he's thinking, right? So he knows well the lessons of the Great Depression, because that's where Bernanke's strength as a historian comes from. He's an economic historian, and the Great Depression was his specialty, and he was bound and determined not to throw us into a Great Depression. And so he wanted to continue to prime the pump as long as he had to make sure we were on solid footing. And the idea is you keep doing it until a place where the real economy is strong enough to take over that job that the Fed is doing. But what if we never get there?
It hasn't happened.
Hasn't happened.
Continue to put $85 billion a month into the pump for 2 years, at least 2 years.
Yeah.
And sooner or later, you know, you can't do that forever, and it hasn't accomplished what it was supposed to do in the first place.
Right. So the real question is, how bad would it have gotten if he hadn't done it at all?
Yeah, well, what if he, you know, goes another year and he still has to put it on?
And he still has to put it on, right. So they're just basically printing money to do this.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to keep doing it. And then he's going to leave his office, right? His term is almost up.
Yes,
it now looks like Janet Yellen is going to get it. Larry Summers, for whatever reason, President Obama was thinking Larry Summers was the guy. I got to tell you, I'm really glad he's not the guy.
Amen.
And Janet Yellen, who I think deserves the job and is very measured and has proven her worth, she's going to probably get it, and I think that's good. But she continues to believe that we should be doing the bond buying, and she also doesn't believe that the economy's strong enough, and so this will continue. And I think that... So here's what I think will happen. At some point in time, it'll have to slow down, ratchet down, or be stopped. And I think there will be a period of economic instability as we see how bad it really is. I don't think that we have a real sense of how bad it is, because this has been propping things up. And so we're going to see how bad it is and how bad it can be. And hopefully the underlying pinnings of a real economy are out there. But I'll remind you, I don't have to remind you, but I'll remind everybody else, we are 4 years plus out from the recession.
You are a smart lady.
4 years out, and we haven't recovered all the jobs we lost.
Mm-mm.
We haven't recovered the income.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't recovered the investment. And the only people who have really done well are those people on Wall Street.
Absolutely.
And not even all of the people there. It's just really the top people.
Mm-hmm.
Because
and the top banks.
The top ones, right? But everybody else, the brokers, there are tens of thousands of people on Wall Street who have lost their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
There was a story in the New York Times yet again about a whistleblower from Citi who basically got swept under the rug, and his testimony won't even be available until 2016, which is 5 years, so statute of limitations for fraud will have expired. What did he say? That's a really interesting interview, and I just think we haven't seen the fallout yet. I think there's more to come. I do think there's more to come. Jerry, thank you so much for your call. It is 18 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find Elise Kling live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
25 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinklink.com. Nick joins me on the line from Norcross. Hey, Nick.
Doing well, the threaded body onto the shot.
Excuse me?
Looks like a ground control.
Nick?
You don't want this guy.
Nick. All right. Nick is having a conversation with somebody else. I don't know what that's about. 404-872-0750. Let's try Mimi. Mimi, you with us?
Yes, I'm with you.
What can I do for you today?
Okay. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I am recently engaged, and on my behalf, I have $65,000 in my 401k. I have about $8,000 in my regular savings, and I don't have any debt.
Good but, for you.
Thank you. But my fiance is another situation. He has, I think it was $75,000 or $78,000 in student loans. And basically, what I'm wondering is, should we combine our finances at this point in time? I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I'm going to leave that question right there.
All right. So when are you supposed to get married?
We are currently in premarital counseling. We haven't set a date yet, but that's part of our issue
okay.
that we're talking about in premarital counseling.
What is his plan for paying off this debt? Because you should not be assuming this debt,
uh-huh.
but the reality is this is like a mortgage. So
that
the two of you together have to figure out if this marriage is ever going to work. Both of you have to understand that he just can't take on that debt alone. You both are taking on that debt. Otherwise, you're waiting until he pays it down. So what is his plan for paying it down? Does he have a job? Does he save? Does he? Where's the rest of his financial head?
Well, on his behalf, his parents, well, I don't want to make him sound so bad, but his parents own a house that he lives in, so he doesn't pay any rent. He doesn't pay any bills, and he just graduated with his master's degree. And so, you know, I guess when he'll be working in his career, and he's an English major.
All right. I want to talk to you more about this. Can you stay with us during the break? Because I want to give you more perspective, and we're going to run out of time because you can hear them playing music, and that means that we're coming up to the bottom of the hour. But if you can stay with me, I've got some advice for you.
Thank you.
All right. You hang on, Mimi, and we'll talk to you again in just a moment. Because when one person has so much lopsided debt, has so much going on in their house, financial house, right? It always bleeds over into the emotional house. And if you guys have a chance of making this work, it all has to be on the table ahead of time, or it's never going to work. So stay with me, and we will come back and talk about Mimi's relationship and her financial issues when we come back. This is the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. It's 1:36 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. Dave Baker is in at 2 o'clock for a special show today. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online, thinkglink.com. Follow me on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. We were talking to Mimi, who's recently gotten engaged. She's got $65,000 in her 401k and $8,000 in savings and no debt. Her fiancé has $78,000 in student loans, no 401k, just graduated with a master's degree, and they are currently in premarital counseling as they try to figure out whether or not they should combine their money. And so she called the show asking for my help. Mimi, is there anything else you want to add to that? Does your fiancé have a job yet?
No, he does not.
So when I asked you if he has a plan for paying down his $78,000 in loans, what does he say about that?
Well, he was, you know, talking to his parents. His parents are kind of well off, and he was thinking that maybe his parents can help him, like, knock down a substantial amount of it. But in my own opinion, I don't think that that's the right thing to do because your parents have their own bills, but, yeah,
okay.
He doesn't have a plan.
All right, he doesn't have a plan.
No.
If his parents are kind of well off or are well off, I'm surprised they allowed him to take on student debt at all. So
that his parents was, he should have been in debt $100,000, but his parents paid that portion.
Wow. That's a lot.
That
for
is a lot.
A guy with a master's degree in English and no plan. So it sounds like you're working and you have a plan and you're doing really well in your plan. And he has a lot of debt, lives with his parents, and does not have a plan.
No.
So tell me what it is you fell in love with.
he's pretty blue eyes. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I fell in love with the fact that he's a kind man. He does a lot for me. When I say a lot, I'm not talking about financially, neither physically, but I'm like, he does the same things that I do, like go to the park, and we have the same belief system, which is very important. And he has like the same goals, like, you know, he wants children, he wants to be married, that type of thing. And, you know, I guess those are the things that I fell in love with.
All right, which is great. I mean, I'm really glad. But I've been married 24-plus years.
Oh, my God, congratulations.
Thank
oh
you.
God.
I'd like to say I got married when I was five, but that's not true. So I'm going to just say that having the same belief system is a great beginning, because if you don't have the same belief system, it makes everything a lot harder. But you got to have a plan on how you're going to live. And when you have children, if he doesn't have a job and a life and a career and a plan, you're going to be the one having the kids and supporting the two of you. And even if he does the reverse and he stays at home and he cares for the kids and you do that kind of a situation, he has a master's degree, and I still think he needs to contribute something to the family pot. Most families today need both incomes to live.
Mm-hmm.
So combining your finances means two people have to have some sort of a, you know, input, especially because you don't have kids. It's not like he's going to start taking care of kids tomorrow, staying at home. And so he's got to have a plan, and I don't think that you should marry him and combine your finances until he's got a plan of action. Because $78,000 in debt means the two of you aren't going to be able to buy a house anytime soon. You're going to have to pay down all this debt. It's going to take a lot of money away from your income. I mean, how much are his monthly payments?
That I do not know. We just began to talk about it, and when we started talking about the financial part of it, I guess moreover, I guess I haven't been as transparent as he's been. But for me, I didn't want to disclose all of my financial information in advance, because I just thought that would be like kind of a, oh yeah, definitely I want to get into a relationship with you, or I want to marry you. But for him, you know, that's just, I don't know. It was something that we didn't talk about until premieres were canceling.
You know,
he can have his own finances and I have my own finances.
That is not the way to begin a good marriage. I got to tell you. It's just not, you are keeping things from him and you're not open and honest. And the fact that you felt like you couldn't disclose all of this stuff about money and ask him these questions, like, I'm sure you don't know what his credit score is.
No.
That tells me you're not ready to marry him. And even if you go through financial counseling and premarital counseling, like, that's fine as far as it goes, but you need time on the other side of that. Once you guys can sit down and have open, you need to be able to have open and honest conversations about money without a third party being in the room. And you need to learn how to do that. Because life is a series of conversations about money, Mimi. It's about what's the budget for redoing the bathroom and how much did you spend on groceries this week, and we can't go out to dinner anymore because it's eating up too much of our money. And, you know, who's going to be the master of the budget in the family? Who's going to understand the difference between what comes in and what goes out? And who's going to decide what your financial goals are, and who's going to decide who's setting those goals? Is it going to be you who's actually making money and doing a good job of building your retirement savings and building your emergency savings? Or is it going to be him who's racked up $78,000 in debt, lives at home, and has no plan? And when you decide to set the table for that, how is he going to feel? And you guys have to learn how to do this together, because there will be times in your life where the earning power is unequal. And how do you handle that? And that's really about emotional maturity. So I don't love it. I did not love it when Sam and I were engaged and I was trying to plan a honeymoon and I wanted to go to the Far East. And he said, you also want to redo our apartment. And I said, I did. And he said, fine, here's your choice. You can have two new bathrooms and new wiring, or we can go to the Far East. Or you can have two new bathrooms and we can go to Canada for 3 weeks. Right? Those are the hard choices of life. And I tell it now as a sort of a funny throwaway anecdote. But that wasn't like a one-sentence conversation. That was a couple of weeks of hammering down and arguing and discussing and trying to understand that both of us wanted a lot, and what were we willing to give up to get it. And that kind of emotional maturity is so, it's the bottom line for a successful marriage. Do you feel like you're ready for that?
Partially, the reason why I didn't disclose my financial information to him because I just didn't want to make him feel bad. I mean, he was talking about his stuff, but I didn't want to talk about mine because I knew that it would definitely trump what he had going on. But then on the flip side of that, he does live at home with his parents, or his parents own the home that he lives in that he doesn't pay any bills in. But from his standpoint, maybe we can pay bills in his parents' home, which I don't agree with that. But
what are you going to do? You guys going to get married and move into his parents' house?
That's what his plan is.
That's his plan. Wonderful. So now let's have a whole different conversation, because now you have to, like, get married and live with each other and figure out how to balance that relationship, and you're living with his parents. How long have you known this man?
I've known him for approximately a year.
You have at least another year to go before you can even think about setting a date. I'm just going to throw that out there. Maybe
wow.
You can do it sooner, but I don't think so. He has to have a plan that's stable enough to get you to a place where the two of you can live an independent life. I don't mind moving in with in-laws. I have nothing against moving in with in-laws. But a new bride moving in with people she doesn't really know? How many times have you had dinner at his parents' house with his parents?
Maybe 4 times.
4 times. Wow. And you're even considering moving into their house?
No, I have to know.
I mean, really?
I said we can move into my condo.
Fine. But, you know, then he needs to have a plan, and I think having just graduated, it's going to take him some time to get a plan, and you have to give him the time it takes for him to develop a plan. So you can't, like, go in there and go, well, we can live in my condo on my income while you figure out your life. That's not a stable beginning either. Each
well,
person...
Should we call off the engagement so that we don't have, like, the pressure of society, if you know what I mean? On his case and on my case, like, don't stay engaged for a long time, and let he work on his issues, and then we'll come back together.
I think that you don't need to separate. So first of all, the fact that you're worried about what other people think about you being engaged is another clue that you're not really ready to get married.
Oh.
You shouldn't care. You guys could be engaged for 5 years. Who cares what other people think? Life is not about what other people think. Life is about what is right for you and your fiancé. And if what's right for you guys is to be engaged to show each other that you're committed to working through this, then be engaged.
Well, his parents is not... that's a whole other story. But
see what I mean?
They're old-fashioned. They have a lot of pressure on him to either go for it or don't do it at all. And I kind of feel bad for him because he has a lot of issues on his behalf. There's no pressure on my behalf.
Mimi?
Yes?
I'm going to say what I said before.
Oh.
Listen to me. Because I don't want to counsel you on the other side. You are at least a year away from being in a place to set a date with this man. And if that's too much pressure for you to take from his parents, imagine what life is going to be like when you move into that bedroom. I don't recommend you continue down this path. There are too many issues. If you can't even tell me all the issues. You're like, oh, that's another issue. Just unpack all the issues. Take out a piece of paper and make a list. Make a list of all the things, reasons why you want to marry this man, and make a list of, and be really honest with yourself, of all the things that are throwing up cautionary flags.
Yeah.
And then you will work out a path to work through those one by one and see if that's going to be a possibility. But under no circumstances should you be combining your finances with this man within the next year. And I'm just going to say that very firmly to you. Life is very challenging. Married life is very challenging, even when you're with your soulmate. And I swear to you, I am with my soulmate. And I'm telling you that life throws you curveballs all the time that you can't possibly imagine. And if you and he aren't on the same page right now, when life is good and you haven't even had those challenges, it only gets tougher, and the tough survive. And I want you to have a successful marriage. But I can just tell in these 10 minutes that we've been talking that you have so much to unpack with this man before you can even set a date. That talking about his finances and finding out what his credit score is probably the least of it. And so I love that you guys have similar, I love that you guys and describe each other as having like a similar belief system. That's great. But you only go to church once a week, maybe twice. The rest of the time, you have to talk about all the other stuff, like what happened at work today and dealing with your boss and dealing with his boss and your budget and your money. And money troubles are the number one thing that cause divorce in this country. And I just don't want you to get there. I want you to have every chance in the world to make this marriage work. And to do that, you're going to have to take the time and work through these issues so that you and he can start on a level playing field. And that is the only way you're going to get to your 24th anniversary. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. 56 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. We're going to give away a quick prize pack, four-pack of tickets to the North Georgia State Fair, September, now through the 29th at Jim R. Miller Park in Marietta, a four-pack of VIP tickets to the 30th Annual Fall Atlanta Home Show, October 4th through the 6th at the Cobb Galleria Center, and a pair of tickets to see Michael McDonald in concert, October 13th at the Atlanta Symphony Hall. Produced by ASO Presents, Weekend Prize Pack, presented by McDonald's, McCafe, I'm loving it. The value's $238. We'll give it away to the fifth caller, 404-741-0750. Good luck. Dave Baker is in next. Thank you to everybody who called today. It was a great show. I'll be back next Sunday. In the meantime, check out thinklink.com. You can ask a question at questions@thinklink.com, and I will do my darndest to get back to you. In the meantime, I hope you have a great week. See you next week.
We're not at home.